Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by our man Kyle Devitt, who by all accounts is feeling a little better today than you were at this point last week, right, Kyle?
A little bit, yeah.
There you go. So we are going to dive through last weekend's games as we are wont to do. Maybe talk a little bit about the ML All-Star selections, which will square off against Team USA in Boston in a couple weeks. We'll talk to a Boston cannon if all things go according to plan. And then we'll end up with a little bit of a theoretical, philosophical, tactical conversation that's an extension of a conversation that Kyle and I had via text message last night. So, Kyle, we'll start with the best game of the weekend, and that was Friday night at Selby Stadium as the Boston Cannons were able to hold on for come back late is the best way to describe it, for a 17-16 victory over the Ohio Machine. Kind of puts, you know, I told you last week on the podcast that it was the game that I was most looking forward to, and for Ohio, it was going to have, you know, significant meaning if they were to win. Does it mean that they've arrived? If they lost and fall to 2-4, does it mean that they were, you know, they're a good-looking team that isn't going to be competitive throughout the season? What did you see in terms of the Cannons' victory, and what do you take away from it for both teams, but I guess, you know, kind of starting with Ohio?
I thought Ohio did fair shares of dominating the game. They definitely played better on offense than the Cannons did, which is weird because the Cannons won, obviously. A lot of the Cannons goals were kind of controversial. You had Boyle sticking one at the end of the half. Buchanan had one that was reviewed that came back as a goal that was originally called in the crease. And those two goals were the difference in the game. That's how, you know, two goals make a difference in a 17-16 game. That's just how it goes. And Ohio's goals were, I can't tell how many times they hit the pipe. Like, how many times do you think Ohio hit the pipe with, like, an amazing shot?
I think, like, four times in the first half. You know, maybe even the first quarter. It was crazy. Harrison had a bomb that went off the pipe. And those pipe shots, I think Schreiber hit a pipe on a really nice shot as well. Those are the ones that made me stand up and say, this is a really good and exciting game. And I actually tweeted, I think, that in that spell of time that the offense that was being played in this game was the opposite of the offense that was being played on the game the night before, which we will get to here momentarily. But yeah, no, the pipes were definitely not in Ohio's favor.
No, and, you know, the other thing that wasn't in their favor is Jordan Burke was in net against them.
You know, hey, one thing that I don't like in MLL rule, I don't think that if a pipe shot goes over the midline, that it should be over and back. And I'm pretty sure it is, correct?
No, that actually isn't true. If the I can see how you would think that because they didn't clarify that on the broadcast when that happened. When that happened, one of the machine actually
stepped off sides.
Yeah, they stepped off sides, so that's why the ball went back.
So okay, well then I guess how do you explain that it's not over and back? Is it because there's no possession and the shot clock has been reset?
Right. It's not an error. You know what I mean? It's a rule meant to penalize, you know, stalling or a bad pass. And when you shoot the ball and the ball hits a pipe and it goes, you know, 50 feet the other way, how are you going to penalize the team for that? You know, I think it's kind of one of those spirit rules that actually works. I think it also depends on the crew, as bad as that sounds, because I have seen it called and I've seen it waved off at the same time. Like in the last last 2 years, not really this year. Last year it happened a couple times and the call was split depending on the crew. And I can't remember specifically which game, but I definitely remember seeing it called both ways. But as far as I understand it, if it hits the pipe and it goes all the way back, it's not an over and back. That's what I understand.
It was an interesting kind of situation. And I do think that the broadcast, at least to some degree, addressed it as being an offsides, but that's neither here nor there. Relatively small aspect of this game to kind of fixate on. Just in terms of a couple of personnel observations that I pulled away that I wanted to see whether or not you and I are on the same page. A couple of interesting elements to the cannons that are emerging, and it basically looks like it might be a second midfield line. You know, Rob Emery was blanked, and I think he took two shots. Thought he played a little bit better in what I saw of him last week. But I've been impressed with what I've seen out of him a little bit. And then, you know, similarly, Owen Bly running out of the box. He got a goal. What are your thoughts on just a little bit more complementary offense emerging, you know, alongside Rabel Buchanan, obviously Will Manny off to, you know, an incredible, incredible season. And then, you know, Ryan Boyle, who is, you know, still consistently putting up a couple points a game.
I think Bly has played attack more recently, and they used him out of the box in this game. Boston, if they get in a 6-on-6, they will just sub guys off one by one to get a matchup. So you won't see a lot of teams do that. I think Charlotte does that sometimes. I guess that would be the other team that does that. Obviously, they have differing effects if you look at their records. I mean, I guess it's only like a two-game swing, but still. I think Bly isn't – it like plays better at attack than their other option, which was Jack Rice, who's been like mercurial at best. Really not super consistent. The whole attack of Boston, the most consistent player is Will Manny. It's not Ryan Boyle. I don't think Ryan Boyle's been consistent. I don't think he's been that good. I mean, maybe not statistically, but the way he played, you know, was a little more aggressive. He drove to the net a couple times. What you'll see a lot with Boston is they'll get that ball on the clear and they'll swing it down, the left wing, and Boyle will just kind of trot to the corner and see if his defenseman will follow him. He'll literally stand there and look for cutters for 5-10 seconds, and then he'll move the ball. And that's like the last time he touches the ball. You know, that's like how they set up is he looks to feed for 10 seconds of the shot clock, and then the ball moves, and then he's just a hinge moving the ball. I think that their other attackmen are much more dynamic. I think Bly got his goal as an attackman on a break, I think. Right?
I don't remember that specifically. I thought it was in a setup possession and he was run out of the box, but I could very easily be wrong.
I think he got a good shot. I remember that happening. He definitely got a good shot. I don't know if he scored on that, but I could have sworn that he got it on a break, cause he was low and there was a turnover, at midfield and it got swung to him. You know, Boston does weird stuff. They don't do what other teams do. They use a ton of picks and sweeps. They change how they played each game to like fit the other team. They don't have a set style that they play, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but they haven't, like, the games they lose by like one or two. They haven't gotten blown out like they have last year. And I think that's down to a lot of the adjustments that Tucker and Slate, who came in this year as the D coach, have made for them.
And then on the flip side, just talking a little bit more in depth about Ohio, you know, you and I have spent a fair amount of time on this podcast talking about their offense. One of the things that I think had been a riding presumption was that, you know, their specialty positions, particularly faceoff and goaltending, were an area of weakness. And, you know, they were below 50% in both, but only slightly, made 14 saves, let in 17 goals, and were a faceoff win below 50, going against, you know, a Boston team that's going to face the ball off, you know, pretty well with Chris Ek, certainly a U.S. team hopeful, if not the U.S. team faceoff specialist, and that's not a story for this podcast, as Greg Grenlian has been reintroduced to the U.S. national team mix. Point being that I don't think that those areas are a big part of their overall deficiency, and kind of the reason that they're sitting here at 2-4. If you were going to address one area of need for Ohio, and you can feel free to disagree with me on that, you know, presupposition, what would be the spot that you would work or that you think is most important for them to improve?
I think they need one more real veteran, mean, fast defender. I know that's like really specific and like they need this, they need this, they need this. I think that's, you know, it's not like they miss Hartzell. I think, you know, Farrell's come in and done a pretty good job and been, you know, Brian Farrell. He's huge and somehow he runs up and down the field like a gazelle half the time. And the other half of the time he's beating the crap out of people. I think that what they're looking for is a guy that's speedy and not necessarily a guy who beats people up, but a guy that is like, can stay with a guy. Because I think the foot speed of this defense is atrocious. I think that's a weakness. I think they're very strong on the inside, but they're too aggressive. And if you watched Ohio play, Chesapeake, I think it was, that was last week, you would see that Ohio would push, you know, Wiedmeyer on an island against Mundorf, and Mundorf would have to make four or five moves, but he would beat him every time. And the slides are really slow, and the slides aren't slow because the defense doesn't know what it's doing. The slides are slow because the defense is slow. You know, the slides there, it's just, you know, two steps away. And they need a guy that can, you know, lock a guy down, shut a guy off, and a guy that can slide quick or hedge quick and throw a check. And they don't have that. They have a bunch of big, huge guys that throw like bombs at guys' arms. Like that's what they have. That's not a horrible thing to have, but I think you still need, you know, they need to play tighter, and they, you know, for their first year, they experiment with a zone. You can't play zone in MLL. It's ridiculous. But they could try it if you have slow guys, you play a zone. You know, if you pack it in the MLL, you might actually get some results unless, you know, your crease guy is bad, but I don't think they have a crease guy. I think Bice would be great at that. So I think they need a defenseman.
Let me jump in because you've been going for a while here. Well, no, see, that's my point, is that it's not necessarily too specific. It's just too unavailable. I totally agree with you, by the way. I think that is their biggest area of need. I just don't know who's out there that not even necessarily available for a trade, but like just who in the MLL is that person that you're talking about? Mitch Belisle? You know, like how many guys are fast and mean and veteran?
Karolunis, Bocklet, let's see. Yeah, Karolunis, Bocklet, who else is fat? I think Noble. Although Noble just showed that he's, you know, Chesapeake turns you really mean, I guess, with his hit on Lavelle. I think, you know, not necessarily a smaller guy. Those guys are a little on the small side, but just a fast guy. Guy that's fast. You know, get the ball up off the ground. You know, Lacasio for Rochester has done a great job of that. I think he looks good. He looks great, actually, considering where he was drafted, especially. You know, just not even necessarily a ball handling guy. I mean, you know, CJ Cosfield could do that. You know, all these guys like flying around the league. I mean, there's skill there. You just, I feel like the combinations the teams are putting together are based more on veteran knowledge and, you know, past playing experiences than actual and availability and geography more than schemes, if that makes any sense.
Well, can talk to a guy who can address the Ohio Machine defense, and because he just played against them, Will Manny. We're going to bring him onto the show right now.
Nice.
And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues with Boston Cannon attackman Will Manny, who's coming off of a 7-point night against the Ohio Machine, the game that we were just talking about. And Will, you know, obviously there's a lot to kind of catch up with you about as you've gotten off to a really hot start this season. But I wanted to start with this most recent game against the Machine and just kind of, you know, get your thoughts on how you felt like you played, your team played. And also, you know, Kyle and I have talked a fair amount about this Ohio team. You know, I've not made my interest in them, in their development, a secret. I'm curious as to what your thoughts are on them as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great up and down game. You heard Ryan Boyle say it in his interview. It was just very fast paced. Two offenses that I think are very similar, midfield oriented with their dodging to initiate, and the tackling are on the finishing end. But I kind of played with what I like to say is with a pissed off attitude after that Lizard game. I especially myself, I had that opportunity to tie it at the end of the game. And Drew had a nice stop on me. So I kind of was looking back at that all week when I was training and getting ready for this game. So I really played, I focused on myself with my opportunities, saying if I get six or seven shots, I need to shoot like 50%. And I was able to do that. I'm riding hard, doing the little things. But as a team, the meetings that we had and practices we had before Ohio, we kind of spilt it out on each other saying, listen, if we don't play as a team, we're not going to be successful. And we needed to start backing our defense up. The games that we've won, we scored over 13 goals. So clearly our defense has been and holding it down. But when we play as a team unit on offense, we can play fast. We can play 6-on-6. And I think we're the best team in the league if we play together on offense, because I think our defense is phenomenal.
The All-Star list came out earlier this week, and I asked one of the guys that put it together, Coach Cottle from the BayHawks, what the deal was with a couple guys that didn't make it, you in particular. And he told me that it's an all-MLL team, not an All-Star team, and it's not an All-Star game. He didn't let me retort that because he likes to talk. No offense. Good job, Cottle. You beat me. But he said, well, you know, that's, you know, that's what's going to happen. And I asked him, I was going to ask him why I don't think that comforts the guys that didn't make it. You know, I think that you, Bocklet, your teammate, Steven Berger could have made it, easily instead of a guy like Joe Walters only played one game. I guess my question for you is, does that make you feel any better that it's not an All-Star team and it has nothing to do with your performance this season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the initial, after initially seeing that, I was a bit annoyed and a little frustrated. I didn't really know what needs to happen in order to be able to get that sort of accolade and have fun, especially in Boston, which would be in front of my home crowd. But I mean, I'm not the type of person that's going to dwell on that. It's just going to give me more motivation to, play Coach Cottle and those guys this weekend. So I was looking forward to strapping it up already, but, now it's just more fuel to my fire. There's a bunch of names on there, obviously, that are well deserving of it. Every single name on that USA roster and on this MLL team or all star team, whatever you want to call it, are all great players. There's so many great players in this league. But I feel like there's always talk about this and that with who's doing well with points, who's going to make this team, especially if they had two all star teams. You never know. So this proves to me that you never know, and you just got to go and have fun each week with your team, and produce. And now we're searching game by game, trying to be playing in Atlanta at the end of the season.
Well, do you feel like you've improved significantly from last year to this year?
Most definitely. I feel like just my on-field presence, my mentality, and my leadership role has just developed so well with playing with Ryan Boyle and Kevin Buchanan, Mike Stone, Paul Rabel. Those guys give me tremendous confidence. Coach Tucker, it's something special. And being able to be a part of it from training camp this year, being able to be part of those 3 or 4 weeks was even better because you get to prove yourself there from the hard work you did off season. And I mean, just going each week and having people ask myself what my thoughts are in my second season on what we want to do game planning wise, you can just see that the team aspect is really sinking in with our with the roster and the dressing 20 guys that we dress each week. But yeah, I definitely feel more confident each week going in, especially from last year, and becoming more of a leader day in and day out.
Well, I remember when you were drafted, a bunch of people didn't really think that you would make an impact. And I'm happy to say I was not one of those people. And one of the reasons I wasn't one of those people is I actually saw you practice. I covered UMass in the fall, and you had a hamstring injury, and you were still the fastest person in all the sprints and still beating everybody. And I kind of knew at that point, and that team was very good. That you would be an excellent MLL player. Kind of talk about, you know, you talked earlier about motivation and guys kind of doubting you, you know, and you've proved a lot of people wrong. I mean, is that like a big part of what makes you a successful player?
Yeah, I mean, at UMass, you develop an underdog mentality to begin with. I mean, I've been hearing I'm too small, this and that, since high school. But I mean, that's the best part about lacrosse. You guys know that you could be any size, shape, form, and be successful if you're good at one thing. But I've been developing my game for years now. Obviously I've had the quickness and the speed. That's just something I've had, but I've been working on my not so much power moves, but being more aggressive above the cage, the shooting aspect and getting a little bit more of a range. I've never really shot outside of 6, 7, 8 yards. So, when I have those opportunities. I've been working on that, but I mean, there's doubters everywhere. No matter what sport, no matter where you are, there's going to be people that say, "Oh, this is going to go well. This isn't going to go well." But I mean, it's all up to yourself. And I this was one of my dreams to play in the MLL. And I worked hard after that happened. I was like, wow, I'm going to be part of a great organization, being able to play with Paul Rabil and Ryan Boyle. I thought that was the first thing that came to mind, being like, I'm going to be able to learn from these guys and be a part of something special. And if you don't work hard for that, then I don't know what you're doing, wasting time being drafted. So, that was my mentality, and I've been brought up and raised that way. And I'm taking advantage of these opportunities since you don't have long to really do it. That's what I think about every day when I wake up and getting the day closer to playing my next game, my next practice. So, the opportunity was huge.
Speaking of opportunities, when the partnership between Major League Lacrosse and LXM was announced, I seem to remember that you were among those tweeting that, you know, this was a cool opportunity, another element, another chance to play pro lacrosse. I know that you're in the middle of the MLL season. This is probably as far away from your mind as can be, but what is your attitude toward LXM? Is that something you think that you'll participate in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to look into it, at least for a year. I was able to talk to I'm pretty good friends with Peter Baum, and I got to know Kyle Harrison, and I was able to ask those guys what the scoop is on the time frame when you're going to be reaching out or who we need to talk to regarding that. And they said after the MLL season's over, they're going to reach out to people and get an idea of who's going to be playing. And I told them I'm in. I definitely want to be a part of it. I think that's a great, like you just said, opportunity to be able to travel more, get more exposure, grow the game. And hopefully make it more competitive. But something like that is great. Those guys are running that show really well. Xander Ritz and all those guys out west. But I'm definitely going to take that into consideration, and hopefully it works out, because I would love to be able to play, I guess you can say, 12 months around the year and be a part of something that continues to grow, hopefully at a rapid pace.
I'm going to end this with a silly question. Better hair, Canella or Tucker?
Oh, man.
That is a great question.
That is a tough question. I mean, the guy who made me who I am, since I was with him for 4 years, Coach C is the man, gave me the mentality that is helping out my team, and bringing more UMass guys to this Canada's team. So Tucker asked me about what that mentality is all about, the blue collar mentality. So I'm going to have to go with GC on this one, but Tuck knows he means more to me than everything. So I'm going to have to go with GC.
Nice.
Will Manny, thank you so much for your time, man. We really appreciate it.
Terry and Kyle, I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, man.
I feel like he didn't hear the question. I feel like he was answering like, who?
Yeah, he didn't hear it. I think that was a bad connection.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all right. It was funny. The listeners will hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
Smile. And by the way, it's Canella 100 times out of 100.
I don't know, because Tucker's is longer, so it feels like it requires a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a little more, it's weathered, whereas, and has a more natural look. I'll give you that.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, Canella has, like, he manages to have a fair amount going on despite it being relatively short hair.
True.
Which is a gift. That's not something that's easy to pull off. Trust me.
I can't do it.
No, I can't do anything. So, I can do the number one cut pretty well.
You rock it well.
My scalp is, smooth enough that I can barely cover it with hair, and still
you're basically like a walking Supercuts commercial.
All right, well, Kyle, back onto the topic at hand. We're going to transition into, you called it the worst game of the weekend. I, you know, certainly don't want to be on the record for saying that.
Oh no! I said worst game of the season.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't want to undersell it, even though the goal scoring record was set with the double overtime game winner.
Yeah, by someone who was, in my opinion, allegedly super concussed. super concussed.
Okay.
I mean, I asked Sudo about it on the call. Lavelle, he said that Lavelle got hit in the jaw. Maybe that's true, but I still think you can get a concussion by getting hit in the head like three straight times, getting drilled. And I don't know if he's the smallest guy on the field, but he's the shortest. You know, like Caleb, he's the shortest guy out there. There's a difference. Trust me. And I think that putting him back in the game, I don't know. I was surprised to see him after the Noble hit. And by the way, on that hit, that hit, I swore that was Polanco. I rewound it three or four times and was like, who is 45? Oh my God. That's Noble. Just plants him like way after the ball's in the net. And I've never seen anything like that personally. So, I forget who I was talking to. I think I was talking to Babbo, and he was like, yeah, must be something in Chesapeake. Just makes you nasty. Just turns you nasty. but yeah, that play set the tone, and it was all, you know, the Cottle and Sudo gave credit to the goalies. Like, all right. Do you give credit to the horrible passes that are like 30 yards that guys were picking off left and right? And then a guy would pick up a pass from Rochester and bring it all the way down and throw his long pass, and that pass would get knocked down or picked off. That happened like 10 times in the game. I can't remember the last time that happened in an MLL game where like someone went for a super home run pass and it was so bad that the other team's like, oh, thanks. I'm going to take this down the other way myself. You know, I just, that's why I thought it was bad, because it just looked like everybody was trying to be a hero. And that is not good. That's not team lacrosse. It's not all lacrosse. It's not good lacrosse. It's bad lacrosse. You know?
And there were a lot of penalties.
Yeah, there's a fair amount. I mean, they were, you know, was it a lot for Chesapeake though? Isn't that kind of what they do? They like lead the league in penalties by like 20 minutes or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah. 11 and a half minutes total in this game. Mm-hmm. Reminded me of a Stevenson-Salisbury outing, as a matter of fact.
Ah, yes.
So, I mean, what do you take away from these teams? And you know, now that Chesapeake remains on the one-win dime, what's, you know, how much longer can we go on, you know, just waiting for a Chesapeake surge?
I'm done.
Okay. Are you?
I'm done waiting for it. Like, I just assume that they're not going to get it together till at least after the All-Star break. Yeah, I just think this team, they haven't found the right combination. All they do is hack people, and it's caught up with them. You know, I think that a lot of teams are snickering behind closed doors when they see Chesapeake's film, and they're just like, all we have to do is get this guy to draw penalties, and we're going to score a man up every time, because the man up D is awful. They draw tons of penalties. You're going to have a lot of possessions because their faceoffs are awful. Kip Turner is up and down, like not a super hot goalie, although he had 18 saves in this game, but that way had 21. You know, I can't remember the last time Turner had a better game than his opposition. You know, the opposing goaltender has outplayed him. I know people don't compare those a lot because obviously they don't play against each other. They're just kind of playing the same role on teams. You know, it's like defensemen don't go against defensemen. So when you like do those like previews, like give the edge to this guy, give it to this guy. I mean, that's not how you do it. That's not how it shakes out really. But I think he hasn't won a goalie battle. And I think that's until he does that, they're not going to win. I just flat out think that until they get their penalties under control, Kip Turner wins a goalie battle and they figure out their personnel, they will not win. So that's just my point, my stance on them at this point.
And Rochester is 4-2. How good are they?
They're good, man. They really are. And because they win games by upping the tempo and changing their style. They can win one-on-one. They can win in a set offense. They can win in a game like this, slobber knocker game like this. You know, they have great transition. Joel White and Lacasio are killing it as long poles. Lacasio was super underrated, and the reason he fell in the draft, I remember being at the draft and asking around about this, the reason he fell is because he has a finance job in New York, and all the other teams were scared to draft him because he wouldn't, like, they weren't sure if he could commit. And I asked Sudo about this a couple weeks ago, and Sudo's like, dude, we have games on, like, weekends, and he said that he can make a couple games during the week. He might miss one or two games, but he's going to be there and be a presence, and I think that that gamble paid off. They have a logjam at attack. It'd be nice if they could move some, you know, make a package some guys together and get another really good pull. And I think they'd be scary good as opposed to, you know, really good and in second place in the ML right now.
It's a remarkable turnaround. How much credit do you give Tim Sudan for just kind of keeping it between the mustard and the mayonnaise, as they say?
I'll be honest. I'll give all the credit to Sudo. I will, because there is no one else doing anything with the franchise. Like, who else is there? It's Sudo and his guys. Sudo tells us on the conference call all the time. He's like, yeah, I got everybody's equipment in my garage. I got to put it in my truck and bring it to the field and stuff. Like, that's full service coaching, man. Like, there are guys that just probably flat out wouldn't do that. You know, wouldn't bother. And I think that the guys that are on the team this year that have been there a couple years, like, recognize that, like, wow, this guy actually, like, you know, cares. Like, he's really putting in effort. He's doing everything he can, you know, and he's not a guy that loves the media. He kind of hates us, and that's okay. Like, he's not like Popovich, where he's not going to answer questions and make fun of you to your face. But like, if someone asks him a dumb question, he'll be like, yeah, I don't know. I think we just played all right. You know, he'll give you a pat answer. But I think that he really has carried the example of a guy who's like a player's coach. I think he's probably the best player's coach in the MLL right now. And I think it goes a long way in a league that, you know, the players basically control.
All right, well, let's move on. We've got two games left to get to, and I don't know, we're going pretty long, so I'm hoping that we can fly through these and then cover some of the other kind of topics that we wanted to address. Although, I suppose you went over the All-Star Game stuff a little bit with Will, so we can be short on that. But let's jump down to Florida on you know, Saturday late evening. The Lizards managed to only put up 8 goals in a loss to the Florida Launch, where one of my big takeaways from this game in total is just that Kieran McArdle is a legitimate MLL player. Not that that's a huge surprise, but it's just one of those things. Until you see it, you can't know for certain. Aside from that, I was actually, you know, I think that Breck Wiener has really helped what is, in my opinion, otherwise a relatively inexperienced defense come together. And they're playing above themselves, even though, you know, not necessarily excellently across the board. I thought, but they are physical and they are big and they bring a lot of things to, you know, an MLL defense that need to be there. But you know, Tucker Durkin, Reed Acton, Josenowski is the veteran on the team, no doubt about it. Even Matt Harris, I thought, made a couple nice plays, although, you know, he was on the receiving end of a couple of Brooke Queener rants himself. You know, just the faceoffs weren't a distinct disadvantage, as Chris Mattis was able to more or less hold his own against Grenly. And, you know, I think to me the biggest thing is just that the Lizards can't score, or at least they can't score to the level that you would expect them to be able to based on the talents on this team. Is it any more complicated than that?
I asked Spolino about, you know, the offense, and one of the things that I think maybe people know, if they didn't read my column, one of the things I fixated on was Rob Pinnell leads the league in shots with 56. Who the next closest person is?
I mean, under normal circumstances, I would guess Matt Donowski, but because he hasn't played in as many games, who's taking a lot of shots? Will Manny is taking a fair amount of shots.
That's true. He's up there. No, it's an obvious answer. Sorry.
It's an obvious answer?
Yeah, it's an obvious answer.
Paul Rabil?
Paul Rabil.
Okay.
Paul Rabil has 48. So, and Paul Rabil sees the ball all, I think, more than Pinnell does. And Pinnell has somehow outshot him by 8. That is crazy to me. I mean, Pinnell took 11 shots in this game, and none of them look like they're going in. You know, I think that teams are finally figuring out, like, let's make Pinnell beat us. Let's not make Seaball beat us. Because Seaball can beat you. But Seaball's not getting touches. He had 2 shots in the game. You know, Crotty had 2 shots in the game. I mean, that team can't be happy. And honestly, Spolino wasn't happy. He's like, listen, I know he takes a lot of shots, and I've told him he has to be the quarterback, and he's stuff like quarterback and point guard. And he's like, when you're those things, you can't be shooting. You need to be passing the ball. And the other thing, Lizards don't do a good job in the 6-on-6 of utilizing any picks or movement. There's a lot of one-on-one, high-low stuff, and it just flat out doesn't work against a team that's as good at playing set defense as the Lions are.
So what's the, I mean, you know, is it, I don't know. It seems a little simplistic to just be like, well, Rob Pinnell doesn't shoot as much and the Lizards get better. I find it interesting, you know, it doesn't seem like the same types of interior feeds that he made his money on at Cornell are available. And I don't know if that's an MLL thing or a Lizards thing. What's your read on that?
No one's moving.
Okay.
It's like a wheel. They don't run anyone through the crease. It's crazy. If you watch them play, like, yeah, they'll have a guy like kind of jogged down, but no one's like cutting. No one's really making moves. You know, they have sets. It's not like they don't have sets. I'm not saying they're like doing whatever they want out there, but you know, guys that are scoring goals in transition or like, oh wow, I'm never going to see this ball again. I better shoot it. You know, and that's the problem. There's the distribution and it's not just Pinnell. It's everyone on the team. The distribution isn't there. It's a lot of guys trying to be cowboys and going and getting big goals and trying to make big plays. And, you know, I think someone like, you know, Tommy Palisak, that's just how he plays. You're not going to change how Tommy Palisak plays. He's going to kamikaze to the net more times than not. You just have to accept that about him. I think Rob Pinnell can change how he plays and pass more. Yes. I think Ned Crotty can change the way he plays a little bit. But I said this from the beginning. The problem is that Crotty and Pinnell play the same spot and are most effective from the same spot. So what are you going to do? Alternate possessions? You know, how are those two going to get along? And there have been games where they have. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's a complete failure, but they need to work together for this team to win. Period. End of story. And that's when that doesn't happen, they don't win. Flat out.
And then in the last game of the weekend, it's actually kind of a surprise to me that it's the last game we're getting to. The Charlotte Hounds snapped Denver's regular season winning streak, which regular season winning streaks, in my opinion, are a little contrived, but still an accomplishment, with an 18-15 win over the Outlaws in Memorial Stadium. You know, how big of a deal is this win to you if you're the Charlotte Hounds?
No Junior, no Schwartzman. I don't know. I mean, I sound like a Hounds hater. Like I had Wade Lepark like come after me on Twitter, just be like, oh, you're just so nice to us, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, all right, man. Like it does, like the way that I'm not saying that Denver was bad, or that Charlotte was good because they were bad. I think Charlotte played, this is the best game they played all year and they won. And one of the reasons they won is because they actually had their midfield score. I mean, the midfield scored. Hallelujah. Like you can't win if your midfield isn't scoring. You know, Chandon Schultz gets two goals. Hawkins gets two goals. Trapuka finally gets a goal. You know, John Hawes gets three goals. You know, that's how you can win. And the reason they haven't been winning before that is all those guys haven't produced. You know, Danowski finally gets a hat trick. You know, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're not playing a full Denver team. I don't want to take anything away from them. They did play well. I feel like I'm, you know, saying detrimental things about how they played. They played really well. Ryan Young played really well for Charlotte too. So all these guys played really well and they won. I mean that when your team plays better than the other team, you should win. You know, that's just how it goes in all sports. I think Denver tried to replace Junior with Curtis Dixon, and Curtis Dixon did a great Junior impression, had four goals and an assist in his first MLL game ever, even though he graduated in like 2010, right?
Yeah.
From Delaware?
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, no, that's
the last guy to wear high socks in the NCAA?
That's definitely not the case, but yeah.
Come on. Well, I remember him doing it anyway. I think, you know, it's probably good for Denver to lose. I know that like when they were undefeated last year, everyone was like, oh, you can't say that. You can't say that. Coaches were like, you can't say that. I mean, I think you should, cause it teaches you a little humility. And I think they didn't have that. And Charlotte flat out outplayed them and beat them because they didn't have that. So I think going forward, Charlotte's going to be better. Denver's going to be better. This was a good game for both teams. even though Denver lost.
All right. Well, on that note, where do you want to go? All-Star game? Oh,
well,
you know what?
Go quick. We can go quick.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Go quick. Listen, don't call it an All-Star game if you're going to pick the guys 2 weeks before. That's annoying. Don't ask people that haven't played in the league to be in an All-Star game if it's going to be not going to be an All-Star game, it's going to be an All-MLL team. Also, tell the public that that's what's going on. Also, tell us how you're picking those people. Who's picking those people? My question is that it was Cottle and a couple other guys. Or Team USA is picking the people that they want to play against. In either case...
I don't think that was the case.
I think they had input. I do. I'm conspiracy theory all over that. I don't care. You know? It's speculation. It's alleged. I'm not saying it's fact. I think... You gotta vote for All-Stars, man. You can't have it be All-Star team versus Team USA if it's not gonna be based on this season. I don't think that's fair. And not to the fans even. It isn't fair to the fans either, by the way. I don't think it's fair to the players. Like Will Manny, like Steven Berger. Apparently Berger's doing other stuff, he has Team USA administrative responsibilities, I think. But, you know, there are other guys that have worked really hard and this would mean a lot to them. And in any other year, they would be on an All-Star team. And I think it's a shame. It's really a shame. And I've said my thoughts on it. I'm upset about it. I'm not going to not be upset about it all of a sudden because someone gives me an explanation of, oh, it's an all-MLL team and we picked the best guys. That doesn't make me feel better. And I don't think it makes the other players feel better. And we asked Manny, he gave a really good political answer, but I still think he should have been on the team instead of Walters. And do I think Will Manny is a better player than Joe Walters overall? No. He's not as proven, but Joe Walters played one game, had two assists, and played in the worst game in the MLL this season and had two assists. That's it. Yeah, it enrages me that they went about this in like a backdoor manner and like weren't transparent with their intentions and how they named the team. I think that's not cool. So that's it. We don't have to talk about it anymore. That's my thoughts.
Nice. All right. Well then, Kyle, last night we were talking about this and, you know, it stemmed a little bit from the Ohio Machine kind of needing a pull or, you know, another kind of presence defensively. And my question to you is, and it has more to do with the dearth of defensive talent or at least the way in which defensive talent can be evaluated in an offensive focused league. How many MLL teams have better defenses than offenses right now?
I was thinking about this. I do think this is a weird thing to say. I think that Boston's defense is better than their offense. I think that Florida's defense in the 6-on-6 is better than their offense in the 6-on-6. And I think I think New York's defense could be good, but they haven't played together yet. I think that's it though. And the reason I think that's it is that it's hard to rate offense versus defense in the MLL because the MLL is such an offensive based league. You know, you have the best players in the world, you know, putting up points and having a qualitative measure right there on the page. You know, defensively, there isn't a qualitative measure. You could use ground balls, you could use penalty minutes. If the MLL kept any other stats, you could probably use those, but the MLL basically keeps no stats on that side of the ball. So what you have to use is your judgment. And going into that, it's hard to judge guys, like how good is a guy, like we talked about earlier, how good is a guy like Wiedmeier when Mundorf beats him and Mundorf's one of the best attackmen in the world? How good is he against that guy? How good is he against...
Right, you're venturing into a part of the conversation that is not lacrosse specific, which is just that in team sports, with the exception of baseball now, and baseball has worked very hard, I think, to improve the quantitative quality of their, you know, defensive evaluation, it's simply very difficult to evaluate defensive play because, and I always use this expression, it reminds me of the Dennis Hopper line from Speed. You spend your life trying to prevent the bomb from becoming, and people don't typically notice that. And, you know, if we defensive efficiency is a very valuable team defense stat, but it doesn't attribute who's responsible or who deserves the credit for preventing the possession from ending in a goal, nor does it necessarily include whether the offense made a mistake, and it really isn't attributable to any defensive player. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess my thing is that, like, I too often in my opinion, I too often find myself in conversations where I think people say, oh, this MLL defensive player isn't very good, because they can call to mind all the times they remember the player that he was guarding giving up a goal. And I just think that that's too, everybody in the MLL gives up goals because you're playing against players that are just too good to not give up goals. So then it's who only gives up a couple of goals in situations that is amenable to their team. And it's very difficult, I think, for us to know that without knowing what the game plan is.
I think looking at that from a different perspective, that's a good point. I think one of the things that I would look at is, you know, I think good defense, team defense, individual defense is all about making a guy go where he doesn't want to go. You know, taking away his biggest weapon and making him beat you with something else. So if a guy is really good at turning the corner, Danowski, Crotty, Pinnell, guys like that, you take away the corner. And if he beats you some other way, awesome. You did your job. You know, and I think that comes with scouting. I think it comes with game plans, defensive coordinators. I think it's actually a lot more up to the coaches than anyone else. You know, and the funny thing is, like, I didn't really mention this. I wrote a whole column about, you know, is it a midfielder's league and how the midfielder scoring isn't as high as people think it is. And I think that one of the things that I was going to address, and I actually wrote a whole paragraph about it and then deleted it, was the grippy ball. And people are, like, blaming a lot of, like, low offense on the grippy ball and whatever. Or they're not blaming on the grippy ball, and they're just saying, oh, defenses are so much better. I think it's a combination at this point, don't you? I mean, we're 24 games in. I feel like it's a combination of those things. And the defense is better this year, but I think that, you know, second, third year guys are all better. And the MLL has become a league that's much younger than it ever has been. And guys that are older are dropping out quicker, and got, you know, you got new blood coming in. Yeah, you had Kyle Harrison come in, but you also had Peter Baum come in. You know, for every guy that comes in, there's more young guys that come in and take other guys' places. And I think that as that continues, the play will be more athletic, more explosive, on both sides of the ball. And I think that helps scheming. And I think the coaches pay a lot more attention. The staff do a lot better job. It's not just a summer job where, like, oh, I watched some tape and I'm like, yeah, this guy's pretty good. We shouldn't do this. We should do that. They actually have schemes. They have things that they want their players to do, and they don't have a lot of time to implement them, but they're trying really hard. And I give the coaches a lot of credit for that.
I agree with basically all of your points. You know, I think that the idea of the league getting younger more quickly than it has in the past is that stands up to the eye test for me. But I don't know why that would shade defensively. I do think that an inordinate number of the, when I call to mind the best, like, when I think about the best defenders in the league, the majority, you know, the top, basically all of the, you know, top four or five, Brody, Zink, you know, maybe even Kyle Sweeney, Mitch Belisle, those guys are vets, you know, Michael Evans, those guys have been in the league 5 years at least.
Right.
But when I think about, like, the best defenders in the league from 6 to 20, a good number of them are in their first three seasons. And I think that's way more the case defensively than it is offensively.
Right. I think the difference being that the athleticism, just like all sports, I think athleticism in the last 10 years that the league's, you know, the league started in 2001, I think the last 10 years especially, the athleticism of lacrosse players as you know, let's face it, it's a second tier sport at best, has gotten better as the interest in it has gone up, as the people that play it has gone up, as the athletes that participate in it has gone up, you know, and that kind of stack is eventually going to topple the Jenga tower. We have so much athleticism, so much size, so much speed, so much strength. It's not always just going to be guys playing offense. You know, that's going to be guys playing defense. And I think that makes for a better, product and a better result for both sides. And I think it's going to even out a lot as these older guys leave. And I'm not saying the older guys are bad or they're not good athletes or anything like that. I think this new breed of defenders is much better than, let's say, the guys that Zink played with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and I think that's what this is down to. And I think in a couple of years, you're going to see an NFL where the poles have to be fast, have to handle the ball, have to shoot, have to pass. And I think that's where lacrosse is going to. And that's only going to make everything more exciting and better. And, you know, if the player, you know, teams get more practices and coaches keep doing their jobs the way they're doing them, we're going to see, and I think it already is the best lacrosse, you know, man for man, but I think we're going to see the best tactical lacrosse too, because you're going to have the most weapons.
Kyle Devitt, that'll do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, man, that got real deep, real quick.
You went, yeah, well, we told people at the top it was going to go philosophical, tactical, all the way across the board, and I think you delivered.
Yep, drop a 50 on your neck.
All right, that'll do it. Inside the Cross Podcast.